You are Locked On Rams, your daily Los Angeles Rams podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Rams Nation, what is going on? As always, it is your boy, Sosa Cremenges. I'm a fantasy analyst at Pro Football Focus and your host of the Locked On Rams podcast, your number one daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Rams. Welcome to your Wednesday episode, your midweek episode of the Locked On Rams pod. As always, I appreciate you guys for tuning back in to another episode here with me, your host, and my guy on the other line, Brad Motter. Man, it took 4 or 5 tries to do this intro. I could not stop laughing, but we finally got our composure under us again. My man, Brad, how are you doing, brother?
Hey, man, we're doing good. 30 minutes to get a minute and a half. I feel like there's some progress. And one of these days, we got to put a reel together and just do a Friday bloopers episode, because I know from my past recordings, and I can only imagine when you're doing it 5 days a week, there are a lot of hiccups along the way. And for me and you, they create a lot of laughter and joy. So I know that the audience would love them. But hey, we're in. And now we're cranking towards that 2-minute mark. Let's see how far we can get before another laugh attack or one of our internet goes out. So let's just see where we go.
Yeah, you know, hopefully we can make it through this episode. No issues, no interruptions. And it's going to be a good episode. It's a little bit different. We've been hammering you guys with a lot of draft content over the last few weeks. And we're going to continue to hit that angle over the next 2 weeks while we get closer to the draft. But we're going to put that on pause for this episode. This one, we're going to cover some interesting stuff. We're going to actually look at the current roster of the Rams. We're going to look at some of the players they have now on offense, at receiver, the running back room, tight ends, some of the defensive stuff, the front seven, and kind of set our over-under lines, maybe talk about, you know, what we have in terms of the expectations for certain statistics from guys, maybe some playing time divvied up between certain guys in the same position, and just what we might think might be, you know, projectable for these guys going into this next season. And then in the final segment, we're also going to dive into the curious case of Julian Edelman and whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. I think we're kind of both trending in the same direction there. And we're going to kind of share why we think he is or isn't, and talk about a few other names that maybe should be in consideration prior to Edelman getting any consideration. So going to be a fun one. And that's also going to be very related to the Rams. So make sure to stick around for that. But we want to start first with the over-under stuff. We're going to look at some of the roster right now, some of the more intriguing positions. And I'll kick this one off, Brad. You know, when I look at that tight end spot, obviously the Rams let Gerald Everett walk in free agency. Now he's behind enemy lines. A Seattle Seahawk, I don't know how much I like that, to be quite honest with you. But looking back to last season, and really, I mean, since back to 2017 when Gerald Everett was drafted and Sean McVay took over, last season, and this is no joke, this is so eerie, actually, how comparable their numbers were. Tyler Higbee, 59 targets on the year. Gerald Everett, 59 as well. Higbee, 44 receptions. Gerald Everett, 41. The yards, 521 for Higbee, 417 for Everett. So pretty much nearly down the line, 50-50 type of split. Now, Everett obviously walks in free agency. They are presumably going to replace him with former fourth-round pick from last year, rookie who did not play, Bryson Hopkins, out of Purdue. And, you know, now I'm kind of curious to see and get your thoughts on, what do you kind of make of that tight end situation? Do you think Tyler Higbee is finally going to be, you know, that tight end one, much more involved, maybe get closer to that 700, 800 yard mark where some of the borderline elite tight ends are at? Or do you think it's going to be more of a 60-40, 50-50 type of split that we've seen from Everett and Higbee in the past?
Yeah, man, that's a great place to start, because it's a big question mark for me. And you mentioned Gerald Everett going up to Seattle, and good luck with that. I mean, you look at that in the past few years, I feel like that's where tight ends go to die and retire. Like Jimmy Graham went up there, even though he went into Green Bay after that and had a little resurgence in Chicago, a little resurgence, whatever you want to call that. Greg Olsen went up there, finished up his career. I mean, they've had Luke Wilson, Ed Dixon, Jeremy Stevens, like those are the tight ends over the years. So I'm really curious what they're going to do with Gerald Everett, or if that's just a place that tight ends think there's a great opportunity because you're playing with Russell Wilson, but then he just throws the deep ball and runs around and he's never looking at the tight end. So I'm really curious, just like yourself, like what Gerald Everett does there. And then he's got to face our secondary twice a year. The Niners defense is always getting better. Arizona seems to always be putting pressure on the quarterback and what they're doing up front. So good luck to him, man. I think, you know, staying with the Rams would have been better for him, but obviously the Rams want to move a different direction. But back to the conversation at hand of what we have here, Tyler Higbee definitely has this opportunity to take over that majority role. But I'm just really curious because, you know, he's been in this system with McVay for a while now. And it's always kind of been a little bit of a shared role. And with the pick with Bryson Hopkins, you know, where they drafted him, didn't give him much of anything last year. I don't know if he had any snaps on the roster or not. If it was, it wasn't many. So I'm really curious, what has his production been on the practice squad, and what has development and growth been like? Where is he coming into year two with having no NFL experience? And then also, what are the Rams going to do in the draft? Like, that's one of those weird positions that the Rams seem to love to draft into. There's a few guys later in the draft that you've talked about in some of these mock drafts that might be a good fit. They maybe come in, be a little bit more blocker, or be a little athletic guy that can go down and catch the ball. But I think this is Higbee's chance to break out. We paid him the money to go and break out. He had that big finish to what, 2000, and was that 2019 that he finished the season crazy strong? Looking for him to have that type of play throughout the year. I think it was a game last year we had 3 touchdowns in a game, and then that was about it, right? So really just looking for consistency for him. So if he hits a, you know, 750 yards, 800, 900 yards, somewhere in that range of, like, just give me something solid that we can count on. But he's got a new quarterback, so I'd have to go back and look at what is you know, Matt Stafford been with the tight end. How much is he loving the tight end? Obviously, we saw they had Hockenson. He had a really good, you know, year with him, and saw some development from him. So I'm curious about this one just as much as you are. I think it definitely leans to Higbee, but what's Hopkins bringing in that we don't know about yet is going to be the big question. And what is McVay going to add into this offense? But yes, I see this a big opportunity. We talk about the wide receivers all the time. One of the biggest positions that might win with Matt Stafford coming in is a guy like Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, I'm very fascinated to see how they kind of divvy up that role as well. I think it'd probably trend similar to how you think, more in the favor of a Higbee, maybe like a, you know, 70-30 split between Higbee and Hopkins. I don't think it's necessarily going to be that 60-40, 50-50 type of thing that, you know, we've seen with Gerald Everett over the past few seasons. You know, I wouldn't be shocked if Higbee does find a way closer to that 700-ish yard mark in terms of receiving yardage, maybe a little bit more targets in terms of like 65, maybe. I know it's going to be hard to project, obviously, with a new quarterback, a new sort of scheme, even, you know, offensively. They're obviously going to redesign the offense to Matt Stafford's strengths as opposed to what Jared Goff did well, probably get a little bit more downfield, a little bit more vertical. You know, you see that with the addition of a guy like DeSean Jackson, obviously. So going to be tough to project, but I think it's very fascinating because those are one of the two positions on offense, maybe even three positions on offense, that I think make a lot of sense to discuss. And we're going to continue that discussion in the next segment, as well as potentially look at the defensive side of the ball and talk about that front seven, how we think it's going to work out going into next season. And while we've got you, make sure to come connect with us on Twitter for all the coverage you need on the Los Angeles Rams. You can find me at QB's MVP. You can find Brad at LA underscore Rambling Bear, and you can find the page at Locked On Rams. The fitness industry is incredibly confusing and oversaturated with BS. I'd like to think that my word holds a lot of weight, as I have lost 155 pounds over the last 2.5 years. I've been on the lookout for the best protein bar on the market. I've tried every company, every bar, protein cookie, snack you can imagine, and there is none like the Built Bar. I promise you, none of these other companies compare. Built Bar has by far the most diverse flavors, over 18 at this point. You can really choose whatever you like and actually assemble the package that you prefer. And they have by far the best texture of any protein bar that I've ever tried. And in addition to that, they're also delicious. They're low in calories. They're low in sugar. They have 19 grams of protein per bar. They're high in fiber, and they even work for you if you are on a keto diet. You'll even get a free cooler with your purchase while supplies last. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. The promo code is LOCK15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. Welcome back to the second segment of this Wednesday episode here at the Locked On Rams podcast. I'm your host, Sosa Kremenges, and I am joined by former host Brad Motter on the other line. And we're going to continue where our discussion left off in the first segment. And, you know, there are a handful of positions and positional battles that I think make a lot of sense to talk about here in the kind of the over under work split, work share kind of mold. And so, you know, I'm looking at the receiver position. I think it's a fascinating one. The running back discussion is obviously very interesting as well. And I guess we can kick it off there. We'll go with running back, and then we'll kind of move into the defensive side of the ball as well. I want to look at the Cam Akers Daryl Henderson dynamic. The Rams obviously let Malcolm Brown walk in free agency. I think pretty much everyone agreed with that move. He served his time, so to speak, with the Rams and did a lot in terms of ushering that end of the Todd Gurley era into the younger era of Cam Akers and Henderson. And so now the Rams are left with a running back one in Akers, maybe another running back one in Henderson, two guys that, similar to Higbee and Everett last year, had very similar lines. I mean, it's very, very strange how comparable their lines were. Akers, 145 rushing attempts and 625 yards. Henderson, 138 attempts, so only seven less on the season, and 625 rushing yards, one single yard less than Akers. So very weird to kind of look at that split. Now, I think most people probably expect Akers to take over the workhorse style of role and Henderson to maybe play that change of pace back kind of role, receiver kind of role coming out of the backfield. I think I view it like that, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts in terms of what you think may be best for these guys, even if you think there's another running back on the roster that should get some touches, or do you expect it to be similar to how I expect, which is, you know, a lot more of Akers, a little bit of Henderson, and then kind of, you know, play it by ear.
Yeah, it's funny how the numbers kind of skew to be so similar over the season. But if you take it from like week 10 on, I'm sure it almost shows the split that what we expect to be next season, right? Because Akers just came on near the end and was just like, I mean, I think the one that stands out to me is that Thursday night football game where out of nowhere he just came and they gave him like 26 carries. He had like 180 yards. And it was like, ever since that moving forward, it was like, okay, this is our guy and we're going to force feed him a lot, and which I'm totally okay with. But at the same time, it does make me nervous because we have gone through this history of running backs with injuries. And that even goes to Henderson and Cam Akers. Both those guys were a little banged up last year at a certain point. And Henderson, for parts of his career here with the Rams, we saw Todd Gurley a big issue with that. So as much as I'm going, you know, 90% Akers, let's just feed the beast, right? I'm also going, well, maybe like 70% and keep him fresh, keep Henderson going. Because at some point, I don't want to see where it's, you know, Jones and Calais are going to be our two backs because we injured our first two backs with, you know, overworkload and a weird injury or, you know, some, you never know with football how that kind of lays out. But I do see it in that 70-30 role. I'd love to see Daryl Henderson, if he's not, you know, getting handoffs, that finding a way to get him the ball through the air. And both those guys, right, I think can catch the ball and gain yardage after the catch. So, but that's where I see the running back room. And we really saw Cam Akers. And for that fact, too, I'm seeing it for my fantasy team because I think I got him in a keeper league. And I'd like to keep Cam Akers for where I drafted him and where I can keep him at. So feed Cam Akers. We know that's the stud. That's the guy that we went and got first pick in our draft last year, second round guy, but Henderson wasn't too far behind him in the third round. Like you said, two number ones potentially there. If you're looking around the league, they could probably go onto another team and really battle for a position here. But 70-30, it sounds like a good split. If you want to even go a little bit higher for Henderson early on in the season to make sure that Akers is there for, you know, good playoff push and he's not getting banged up. But man, those running backs, it's all going to come down to who stays healthy.
That makes perfect sense, in my opinion. You definitely want to keep Akers as healthy as possible going into that late push and surge in the season, especially with 17 games now, not 16. So obviously another factor to kind of think about that I didn't even think about until just now. Probably makes sense to go that 60-40 route, like you mentioned. Hell, I think you could even play both guys at the same time. You know, Matthew Stafford back there in shotgun with Akers to his left and Henderson to his right in like a two running back formation. I think, you know, there's enough space and enough creativity to kind of work that kind of package in. And, you know, that's where we're going to kind of leave off on the offense and flip to the other side of the ball. I know you're very intrigued about that front seven, my friend. The Rams obviously paid a lot of money for Leonard Floyd to return, and deservedly so. The guy was a great player last year, 10.5 sacks, a career high in sacks, career high in pressures, according to Pro Football Focus with 44. Clearly one of the best run stuffing edge rushers out there. And, you know, that was a big addition for the Rams, or, you know, a big bringing back, I guess you could say. But they did lose some other guys. You look at Morgan Fox, who was third on the team in sacks with his 6. They lose Michael Brockers to a trade, who was 4th on the team with 5. They lose Samson Ebukam to free agency, who was 5th with his 3.5 sacks. So the 3rd, 4th, and 5th leading sack artists, I guess you could call them, on the Rams are all gone. And that kind of opens a lot of playing time, potential statistics to go get for somebody on that front seven. When you look at Leonard Floyd and the huge money contract that he was paid, is there a certain number that you're looking at in terms of the sacks or maybe even pressures that you kind of want to see for him to justify that? And other than him, do you think there's any one particular player that you're looking at and keeping your eyes on in that front seven that you kind of expect to step up, whether that be an edge rusher like a Okoronkwo or a Terrell Lewis or somebody on the interior?
That's crazy when I hear that. And it's like, I knew we had a lot of guys go on that line, but hearing 3, 4, and 5 gone, and Morgan Fox, man, like such an affordable guy who is nothing but, you know, greatness for us. And maybe that greatness is a step, but for how much time he got and the snaps that he got and to see that production, I was really hoping that he would be a guy that could hang around and seen some snaps, you know, go his way with some of the, you know, the guys that left. But man, Leonard Floyd, I think his mark for me is, you know, he set his own bar, and I think that's double digits. I think it's 10. You know, he got 11 last year, and that's awesome. And if he comes out and, you know, 8 sacks and we have a couple other guys pick up and share some sacks, I think I still could be happy with it because he does a lot in the run game as well. But my bar is going to be at 10 for him, over under 10, especially the big contract that he got. That's what we need, especially when you're talking about 3, 4, and 5 sack leaders gone. Like that opens up more opportunity for him as far as those numbers go. And then when you ask about who else is filling in there, gosh, that's what scares the crap out of me, right? Like we're looking at this list and it's like Terrell Lewis, like that's a guy that has a huge opportunity in front of him if he can stay healthy, right? And what they end up doing with Sebastian Joseph Day. I mean, he's a guy that's like a stuffer, a big body in the middle. He found his way to some sacks last year. I don't really anticipate him taking a big jump, but Obo Okoronkwo maybe is another guy that can really step up as long as he can stay consistently healthy. When he was in there, he was getting pressures on the quarterback. Again, another a guy that wasn't getting a ton of snaps thrown his way. So he's going to have a you know, added role, but you know, it's not going to be Troy Reader. It's not going to be Micah Kizer. Justin Hollins, no. You know, like look, Greg Gaines, no. He's, you know, Justin Lawler, like these guys I'm going, Traven Howard, probably not. Like maybe it's a guy that we don't even know yet. You know, is it a late addition in the free agency? Is it a guy that we go and get in the draft in the 3rd, 4th round that's going to have a great opportunity? There's a guy out there that's not on a roster as it sits right now that's going to be added to a roster and have a great opportunity to be a contributor if he can get to the quarterback and put some pressures on it. But really, I mean, I'm thinking Obo, Terrell Lewis, and then, you know, take one of the random, you know, Justin Hollins, Traven Howard, one of those random guys and throw them in there. And then my over under for them is probably like 5, 4.5. Like it's not very high. I'm looking at one of this going, man, this is one of those years we need Aaron Donald to crank out 19 sacks and, you know, and Leonard Floyd puts up 10 and then we get a, you know, a handful of guys with 3 or 4 and that could get it done. But it's not too appealing right now when you look at where else are we going to get the numbers from. Leonard Floyd has to do his part.
Yeah, I agree that the double digit sack number for Leonard Floyd makes a lot of sense. Definitely want to see him break 10 sacks once again. Kind of prove that he's finally turned that corner in his career where he's playing next to the best player in football, number 99. And it's not just a fluke season. It wasn't just a contract year performance where guys are obviously a little bit more financially motivated to put together a good season. So definitely agree on the 10 sack mark there. More the better, I guess. And for the third rusher, I have to agree. It's got to be Okoronkwo. Some potential there with guys like Terrell Lewis, maybe a Justin Hollins. But even looking back to last season, Okoronkwo didn't play that much. He had a lot of injuries and that kind of stuff coming on. But he did still have 18 pressures, which ranked 5th on the team and in only 120 pass rushing snaps. So that was 7 less pressures than Morgan Fox on literally 50% of the pass rushing snaps. So it kind of speaks to his ability to at least create some pressure. He's got to kind of convert those into sacks because he only had 1 sack last season. But I wouldn't be shocked at all, and I'm sure we're probably on the same page here, to see the Rams go and add somebody relatively highly in the draft at that edge spot, maybe in the 3rd round, maybe even in the 2nd round if they do trade back or stick at number 57. Wouldn't be shocked at all to see the Rams add another edge rusher to this room, or even a late free agent addition like you mentioned. That would obviously make a lot of sense to kind of just round out the room, maybe add another presence that could kind of ramp up that sack number and those pressures, because it's going to be hard to rely on guys like Okoronkwo, who have suffered many injuries in the NFL so far, as well as Terrell Lewis, who we knew even coming out of Alabama last year, a ton of injuries throughout his career, continued into his rookie season last year. Very hard to trust guys like that. So definitely an intriguing discussion there, and I'm very fascinated to see how the front seven shakes out. In the final segment, though, we're going to dive into the curious case of Julian Edelman, for the Hall of Fame and talk about some other players specifically to the wide receiver position that are ahead of him, in my opinion at least, and I'm sure you're going to agree, that should be higher in the pecking order for the Hall of Fame considerations. And we're going to talk about some stuff related to the Rams, talking about certain wide receivers like Torrey Holt and Henry Ellard that are still waiting their chance to get in. And make sure to keep checking back in with us here at the Locked On Rams podcast. All offseason long, we're going to continue our offseason coverage for the Los Angeles Rams. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA and the NHL are in full swing, and BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline even has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it is the best way to place your bets, and it's also free to sign up. You just got to go ahead to their website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. That's betonline.ag. April 19th through the 26th, listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Odyssey and the Locked On Podcast Network, featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Brian Baldinger, and Michael Lombardi. Our local experts for every team making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Follow the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 podcast feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Welcome to the final segment of this Wednesday episode of the Locked On Rams podcast. We got through two very good segments. Brad and I talked about the current Rams roster and some over and under marks that we expect guys to hit. But now we're going to transition into a very interesting discussion that's kind of come about over the last few days. If you guys haven't heard yet, former New England Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman, the famed guy coming in with all these big major clutch catches in the playoffs, as well as one of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history against the Atlanta Falcons. Can't recall what Super Bowl that was now, where, you know, he was diving and the ball was inches away from hitting the floor in that 28-3 comeback. A lot of people have started to settle their case for why Edelman should be a Hall of Fame consideration simply because of his playoff postseason accolades. You know, he's been obviously a very important receiver for Tom Brady in their time together in Foxborough. Obviously made a lot of those big plays, like we mentioned, was his go-to receiver for a few seasons there. But when you look at it as a whole, there are so many good wide receivers that are still waiting to try and get in. Guys that have waited in the past, we've seen, you know, I don't believe Terrell Owens was a first ballot. That might be incorrect. Obviously, former Ram Isaac Bruce had to wait a couple of years and would have got inducted last year, but they couldn't have had the ceremony due to COVID. So I think they're doing some sort of a unique ceremony this offseason. So that's going to be nice to see our guy get in. But you look at some of the other names: Reggie Wayne, former Indianapolis Colts wide receiver, 14,345 receiving yards compared to Julian Edelman's 6,822. And Reggie Wayne was not a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's actually still waiting to get in. And Edelman has less than half of the receiving yards than a guy like Wayne does. And if you recall, Wayne also won a ring with Peyton Manning there, spent a lot of time playing across Marvin Harrison, one of the greatest wide receiver duos. And that kind of transitions us nicely into the discussion here. Obviously, there are two more very legendary style Rams wide receivers that are waiting to get in. You got Henry Ellard, who is probably a little bit older for most of us. I can't recall ever watching him play, obviously. Henry Ellard retired in 1997, 1998. So a little bit before my time. I was born at that time, but didn't get to watch him play. Ellard has 13,777 yards, still waiting to get in, has been waiting for a very long time, might not ever get in. And then you look at Torrey Holt, the legend. Everyone and their mothers have watched this guy, son, your favorite cornerbacks. That's your favorite cornerback's worst nightmare, in my opinion. Big game, aka all hands. 13,382 yards in his career. And I mean, he was just 50 times a receiver Julian Edelman was, and he's still waiting. And I think at some point Holt will get in. But like we mentioned, there's that logjam at wide receiver. So when you kind of look at the Julian Edelman case, you know, you look at some of the postseason stuff, you even look at other guys like Eli Manning, who a lot of people are discussing as a potential Hall of Famer just because of that postseason success, some of those rings. What do you make of this situation? Do you think Edelman's a Hall of Famer? Do you think that eventually he will get in after the logjam kind of goes away? Or do you think that, you know, there's just much more deserving wide receivers out there, and Edelman can make that Hall of Good or Hall of Very Good class, but never really truly hit that peak to actually get into the famed Hall of Fame club?
Yeah, Julian Edelman Hall of Fame talk just makes me need to crack a beer. Like, that's, I need to sip on one and think about it. Because you mentioned about Henry Ellard, and I just feel bad because you mentioned that, you know, me and you probably didn't watch him play at all at any point, and he's just getting lost in time. We need to get Henry Ellard like a TikTok so the people of today know what's going on. He could do a TikTok of all his remixes of all the touchdowns he did and all the 1,000-yard seasons that he put up, because it is kind of ridiculous that there is this look at it, and you talked about some of those numbers, and Adam Rank is a guy that I saw, because I think when we first talked about this off air, I was like, are people like actually in the know saying that this is a thing? And I just started Googling it, and Adam Rank, a guy that I follow on Twitter, was like, yes, he is no doubt a Hall of Famer. And he said postseason matters. And it's like, it does and it doesn't, right? You mentioned Eli Manning, who, if that's the case, gets in for his postseason. He's got some numbers. He put up numbers, but I don't think he's a Hall of Fame type of quarterback. And another name that I saw here, I'm not sure if Hines Ward is actually in the Hall of Fame at this point, but he wasn't a first ballot.
He's not.
Okay, so he's not in. And again, we can compare Julian Edelman to a bunch of receivers, but Hines Ward's got over 400 more catches. He's got double the yards, literally like 6,000 more yards than him. Same with touchdowns, probably over 40 more touchdowns. And if you want to talk about, you know, playoffs and things like that, Super Bowl MVPs, Hines Ward's got one, Julian's got one. Pro Bowls, Hines Ward's got four, Julian's got zero. And then someone comes firing back in the comments, and this I didn't know, but it was interesting. He said Julian Edelman entering 2019 was second in NFL history with 115 postseason receptions, only behind Jerry Rice at 151. He also is one of only 15 players with at least 1,000 postseason receiving yards. Well, maybe they should have like a postseason Hall of Fame, because that's awesome. But I attribute a lot of that to Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. He got you in the playoffs time after time, dude. I love it. He's only got what, three rings, I think Edelman's got, maybe four. But a lot of that is, those are team achievements for getting you into postseason play. Yes, you had to go get the numbers. Yes, you were clutch at very times. Yes, you have that memorable, I'd say top five catch in a Super Bowl. I think you maybe said one of the greatest. That maybe top five is one of the greatest, but I could maybe come up with two or three that I find a little bit more valuable. I mean, I always think back to that one. And now his name is slipping me. Pittsburgh Steelers versus Arizona in
Santonio Holmes.
That, I mean, come on. That is a catch of all catches for the game. Mm-hmm. Called game on the catch. And not to say Julian Edelman, you're not a good wide receiver. Cause you are, you were solid at your role, but you fit the personality of that team and gave that team some personality for a team that had very robotic type players, a robotic quarterback and head coach. Julian Edelman had some pep in between there, but Hall of Fame. Oh dude, that's a stretch, especially when you go and you talk about Torrey Holt and all the greatness that he did and the consistency, during those 17 games. You're talking about postseason that maybe he plays, you know, if you're getting a bye, you're playing, 2-3 postseason games a year. Let's talk about the regular season, 16 games, and who's hitting 1,000 yards consistently in that measure. I think they're just, the Hall of Fame is a mess in general, how this is. I mean, it took T.O. how long to get in the Hall of Fame, and he was, you know, top five type of guy just because of maybe his personality. I love that he didn't go, by the way, just did his own little Hall of Fame thing. It's such an interesting debate in my mind, but am I circling Julian Edelman? Am I voting for him when I'm looking at the other guys that are on the docket? No. So we'll see where it ends up, but man, that's a tough one to call.
You know, I think it's a little bit simpler. I just don't think he's even close.
Yeah, that's the simple answer. You're right. He's not close. Postseason Hall of Fame, yes.
Yeah.
Regular season Hall of Fame, which is what the Hall of Fame is in general. It's both of them. No.
And the bar that people typically set for players that are not quite Hall of Fame caliber is called Hall of Very Good. And I don't even think he's a Hall of Very Good.
Right.
Like, yeah, the postseason stuff is great, right? And it makes a lot of sense when you show up at your most important moments, your clutch. But how can you induct a guy with 6,822 yards over the course of like 12 years in the NFL? That just makes no sense to me at all. You look at Marshall Faulk. Everyone here probably who listens knows about Marshall Faulk, some of which got to watch him. Known as one of the best dual threat running backs of all time, obviously one of the best receivers coming out of the backfield. Marshall Faulk, over the course of his career, had 50 more receiving yards than Julian Edelman had. And Julian Edelman was a receiver. Like, this is ridiculous. I mean, you look at Torrey Holt, 7-time Pro Bowler, 2-time NFL receiving yards leader, first team All Pro, second team All Pro, a ring of his own in his rookie season, one of the all time greats, averaged 77.4 yards per game receiving. You look at Julian Edelman, he averaged 49.8. Torrey Holt nearly had double the amount of production on a per game basis. And then, you know, we talked about Ellard, we talked about Hines Ward, we talked about Reggie Wayne. You got other guys that the younger generation have gotten to watch coming up in the next year, the next two. Andre Johnson, you got Anquan Boldin, who had nearly 14,000 career receiving yards.
I love all these stats of, yeah, sorry, jumping in there. I love all the stats of like random wide receivers that I totally forgot about, like Lavernius Coles, who has more catches, more yards, more touchdowns by a long shot than Julian Edelman. And I'm like, oh, wow, Lavernius Coles. I totally forgot about him. Let's get him on the ballot for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, you look at a guy like Chad Johnson, who a lot of the kids today and maybe even the younger crowd that's listening right now probably got to watch. Chad Johnson, one of the best route runners of all time, has over 11,000 career receiving yards. Doesn't look like he's going to get in anytime soon. You look at a Brandon Marshall, 12,500 receiving yards, maybe never going to get in. So I think it's kind of a ridiculous conversation. I don't know. I just don't see it. I respect Julian Edelman, had a great career, obviously was the underdog, never really got any offers coming out of high school, was a quarterback at Kent State, kind of weird, undrafted. So a great story, but do not see the Hall of Fame love there. I think they got a lot of receivers to try and get in over the next few years.
It makes for a fun third segment, though.
Yeah,
that's for
most
sure.
Definitely. And I think, you know, we might have to dedicate one of these episodes coming up over the next few months, making their case as to why they should get into the Hall of Fame. Torrey Holt, Henry Ellard, we talked about them, a couple more guys, but it was fun to discuss that. Obviously, we want to pay a ode to the legends of, you know, the horns, the guys that donned the horns before the players today kind of made those horns famous. So shout out to all of those guys and congrats to Julian Edelman on a great career, but doesn't feel Hall of Fame worthy to me.
And shout out Henry Ellard for having a TikTok account created in the next
Yeah, we
hour.
Might have to do that for him.
Let's
we might
go.
Have to do that for him. Get him a Facebook account.
Let's get him in front of the what are they, Gen Z? Let's get him in front of the young
and
crowd.
That kind of brings me back is he had 13,500 yards like 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, when that was not happening. Like that is a lot more impressive.
Yeah, when they ran the ball, you're right. When they ran the ball a bunch and through the ground was where you got stuff done. And yeah, I mean, just I think one thing that was tough for him too is kind of looking up as you're talking is his first five seasons were mm-hmm. kind of rough. I think he averaged less than 600 yards. The next seven, he posted 1,000 yards or more in each of those seasons and averaged 65 catches a year. So, I mean, I don't know if it's just the slow start to his career or, again, the era that he was in that he's being overlooked at this point. But as I kind of did some searching on, like, who's getting just totally screwed on this, he was 1, 2, or 3 on every list that I saw. And so there's got to be you know, Cliff Branch is another old timer that is getting overlooked that did a lot. He's up there on every Lynch list.
Yeah, I never heard of Mr. Branch, so that's a generation millennial also slacking here. But
gotta get him TikToks, we gotta get him Instagrams, we gotta get the face snaps and all that good stuff.
The snap Twitters, we gotta get him on that stuff.
Yeah,
too,
exactly.
So. Man,
exactly.
That was a great conversation. I really appreciated you for joining me on that one. Definitely gonna have to pay an ode to these guys at some point throughout the offseason when we have a little bit slower of a schedule we can dive into and make the case for why some of these guys need to get in ASAP. It's going to be fun to break that down, but I appreciate you guys as always for listening to another episode here at the Locked On Rams podcast. You can find us on Twitter at QBsMVP, at @LA_RamblingBear, and at Locked On Rams. Make sure to keep checking back in with us here. We're going to continue our coverage Monday through Friday at the Locked On Rams pod. And please subscribe or follow to get our latest episodes, content, breaking news, and a whole lot more.